Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. Panel moderator Rachel Blakeman will pose the next question in a moment, and the first comments will come from former Fort Wayne Mayor Paul Helmke.
So let's talk about the elephant in the room, also known as President Trump. As when we were meeting to discuss this, we said, well, one of the things we need to do is look and see what President Trump has tweeted in the morning of this event and see if we have a separation of powers issue. And we sort of do. He had some issues with the independence, not necessarily it's more about the independence of the FBI, specifically the investigation of phony witch hunts, as he might call them. And so what are your thoughts on, there's so many, I have a whole list, search warrant for Michael Cohen, criticism of federal judge prior to election, DACA executive order, how does this tie back to Nixon, because when in doubt, always look at Nixon, on these questions. So let's open this up. Who would like to take that bait?
Let me just, before we get to the elephant in the room, just real quickly, love the old stories from both the judge and Phil. Phil, in the old days, they used to send an intern up to hold the clock at midnight. You didn't do executive orders, so you know there used to be other ways around. And with the judge talking about the pay, I remember as a young attorney, I was an assistant county attorney, and I think the county council must have done something that the judges didn't like, because Judge Hines then brought a writ of mandamus, I think, against the county council to force them to give parking spaces or I don't know what it was. But it's we used to have those kind of conflicts at the local level. And then we even had one where a state representative at the time didn't like the way one of the local judges handled a family matter. And so he tried to change the state law on how judges were selected up here. So you get these sort of not separation of powers issues all the time. One of the interesting issues on separation of powers, I think, is raised by the investigations going on, because it really raises the question, whose role is it to investigate the president? And in effect, the president makes the argument that's a judicial branch. I mean, that's the executive branch role. He's the head of the executive branch. We have a unitary executive. And so why can't he fire Rosenstein or fire Sessions or fire Mueller or any of these folks that are investigating him, fire Comey in the FBI? And it raises that issue. How does that really fit into the concept of separation of powers? Generally, judicial branch is going to hear the case. Executive branch, though, is both in effect becoming prosecutor and target, and that gets tricky. And it's interesting. The one case that I've heard mentioned a lot recently is Morrison. This is to play CLE credit again. Morrison versus Olson from 1986, where there was an investigation. A special counsel was appointed to look into Ted Olson. Ted Olson had allegedly lied to Congress on some matters when he was an assistant attorney general. And Morrison was the special counsel. Olson challenged his appointment and said that this is a separation of powers issue. You can't, Reagan didn't want Morrison doing this stuff. You can't have somebody from the executive branch, in effect, going up to somebody who was a part of the executive branch. It goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said the special counsel statute in that case, it's different from what we have now, was appropriate, that Morrison could make his investigation. It was an 8-1 decision, I believe. And they basically upheld Congress's right to set up a special counsel statute. They got into the appointments clause of the Constitution. They said there were parameters there for getting rid of the person that the executive branch was doing, and it was okay. Apparently, though, this is come up again when Congress just recently was voting on whether to pass legislation to protect Mueller. Some of the Republicans apparently argued that they couldn't vote for that because of Scalia's dissent in the Morrison case. And again, Scalia had a very strong dissent in this Morrison case, saying that this was an infringement of the separation of powers, that creating a special counsel really went against the constitutional sort of structure, and had the stinging dissent. Now, the catch is it was only Scalia. So, you know, generally we follow majority decisions, not Scalia dissents. And the line lately about some of some of the electeds that were saying that they had to follow Scalia is that it's no longer stare decisis, it's Scalia decisis is what goes on in the court. So that's it's when you get the president being sued, when you get the president being investigated, you do get these separation of powers issues. The last one real quickly, when the civil suit started against Bill Clinton with regard to Paula Jones, one of the issues that came before the court is, can the president be sued in a civil matter, and or at least can he be deposed while he's president? And the court said, big deal, deposition takes a couple hours. How's this going to mess up the presidency? Duh, you know. It's, we go on. Okay.
Well, and what do we think then also at the federal level where you have overlapping responsibilities? So Congress is the one who declares war, but the president is the commander-in-chief. So there's clearly this overlap. And so in some ways, it's kind of a check and balance, but it also creates a real murky area. Does anybody want to comment on that, on some of those overlaps?
I give I teach a law and policy class to freshmen. And we cover some constitutional issues, Bill of Rights issues. One of my exam questions is, under the Constitution, who has the power to declare war? More of them put down the president than Congress most of the time. So, of course, the last time Congress declared war was December 8th, 1941. So.
It's just like she says, it's a murky area, and it's been that way forever, many decades, and it's going to continue to be that way. I see it more as a checks and balances.
Part of the problem, my read on the whole issue is that the framers at the start, I mean, they feared a strong executive. They created, you know, Article One is Congress, and that's where they're giving most of the power. And they even divided Congress into two bodies because they wanted to keep it from getting too powerful. My basic theory is that that's sort of what the framers did. Then we get politicians that I've watched over the years are always railing against the court. You know, I remember the impeach William Douglas and impeach Warren, you know, billboards we used to see in northern Indiana. And politicians are running against the courts, but politicians have also been railing against the overreaching executive. I think the real problem is that we've got a dysfunctional legislative branch. And I think that's what we've got at the federal level, and a lot of times I think we've got it at the state level. And
Phil, we'll give you time to defend yourself.
And you can see it through this power to declare war. Congress is supposed to declare war. They basically have passed on that power. After 9/11, they did this authorization for use of military forces, but that basically said the president can go after whoever he feels, you know, was part of this attack, and that was a murky attack, so maybe that was appropriate. You know, the presidents are still using the authorization to use the military force to go after entities that didn't even exist at the time of 9/11. ISIS wasn't around. But the president, presidents have tried in the past to go back to Congress to say, give me authority to go against Syria, give me authority to go against ISIS. And Congress has basically said, we don't want to get involved in that. That might be too controversial. That might hurt us with the voters. You keep doing it. And so we get Congress basically, in my mind, playing a lot of politics and passing the buck to the courts to either make the decisions or to the executive to make the decision. And that's bad for the system.
Phil, you're nodding your head.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of this is the result, frankly, of gerrymandered political maps. Because we've seen, for example, over the last 2, 3, 4 years now, the legislation with regards to these abortion bills keep getting struck down. And yet they keep coming back. We hear them all the time in House Public Policy Committee. And so, but you have legislators that if they don't vote for such a thing, they find they're going to be challenged in a Republican or Democratic primary from either the far right or the far left. So it puts legislators in a tough spot because of the maps that were drawn and the way the districts are. And so they have to, legislators, I think, have to decide, and I think, frankly, they know, they're using the courts, I believe, as sort of their own backstop and as their own safety net, if you will. They'll throw it out. But it's also costing us $1 million, I believe, the last price tag I saw.
You realize you're in a room with lawyers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay, we'll keep past it.
But yeah, so talk about that a little bit, Phil. What is that? I mean, so clearly there's bill. I mean, we look at it on the face as lawyers or informed members of the public, and we're like, that's going to be struck down by judges in Indianapolis. So why are we doing this? What's happening?
Well, I mean,
you touch on it a little bit, but I mean, clearly, what's happening?
Yeah, I think it's mostly political. Folks get sort of backed into a corner that they have to do things. I mean, I could go on and on about the political part of it with regards to donors and trying to get out of a primary. And we're seeing, I think there are 12, maybe a total of about 16 or 17 primaries going on for the May primary, including 12 on the Republican side alone. And most of those challengers are coming, I believe, from the far right of the party. And so there's a lot of pressure on there. Now, there has been some resistance, which I think is causing also some of the challenges that we've seen. But again, I think it's really just the legislators are just going to probably in the end say, well, let's pass it and we'll let the courts decide.
There's more discussion to come on WBOI Presents, right here on 89.1 WBOI.